Welcome to Hope Found. This is a podcast about doing life with God. We found hope in the one and only true God through salvation in Jesus Christ, and now we'll share our journey with God through scriptures and personal interactions and stories. Many of the shows will have a study of scripture, and others will feature interviews with family and friends and their stories about finding hope in God. And now here's the host of Hope Found, Hope Ellsworth.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. I am here, obviously, because I'm speaking. And
John... It's amazing how that works.
And John, my husband, my co-host, is also here.
Hi.
I'm glad that
That's
you
the
spoke
second time
because
that you made me co-host.
That would be strange if you didn't say hi, because then it would be like my other personality is, hello, and that just sounds weird.
You're like, John's here. I don't hear anything.
That's right. That's right. And we do have a special guest today. Yes. Introducing Christy Burnett. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. My name is Christy.
Welcome. We are very excited to have Christy today. We are going to hear some amazing stories about Christy and how she came to know Jesus and what Jesus has done in her life. So I'm very excited to hear about that. Are you excited to share?
I'm actually a little nervous, but only because the microphone's in my face. Other than that, I'm fine with talking about,
talking about
my story.
She's like, talking's no problem. It's this thing.
Well, you know, it's kind of necessary because other than that, nobody would hear. And then they would only hear me asking questions and then it would be silence. And then that would just be super weird.
We're
just
back to your split personality.
Yeah, back to my split personality. And then they would be sending like people in the white coats to come get me. So,
Well, I don't want the white coats to come.
Right.
Get you,
so you I'll have to make friends with the mic.
Make friends.
All right. So let's kick this off. You want to tell us a little bit about you and your childhood and your coming up?
Well, I'm originally from upstate New York and very small town, right outside of Fort Drum. For those that know the military, I am the baby of seven.
Oh, wow.
Four, three biological siblings and then three stepsisters that we grew up together. And so consequently, by the time I came around, my parents were already done parenting. So my older siblings did a lot of the parenting as far as I was concerned. I was pretty much a loner. I liked to be by myself. I liked to be outside. Or I like to be in my room reading a book. It was a safe space for me. It wasn't that my childhood necessarily was abusive. It was just very, I pretty much took care of myself. And never really felt a whole lot of love from my parents. So I started looking for love in all the wrong places.
Right.
And that started very young, around 13. So let's see. But my favorite thing as a kid was being at my grandparents' house. My grandfather was, I'm a natural redhead. and so was my grandfather. It was whenever I was with him, it was, he was ash white by the time I, and I'm there. I just color it.
Well, that's okay. Cause you're a grandma. So
yeah,
that works.
I can do it now. Yeah. And so going to his house, it was always nice because he would actually pay attention. You know, I would be able to sit with him, and he was diabetic, and he used to have these sugar-free candies that I remember. I'd sit on his lap, and he'd let me have one. But that, the only time I could have it was if I was sitting on his lap. And we would watch, you know, we would go over for holidays. And then when he died, when I was in the fourth grade, I think it was. And things after that, it was just like there was no... There was no safety, no space where I felt actual love. So you make it up and you look for it other places. 13, I left my mom's house. Some things happened with my older brother, and I didn't want to be there anymore. So I told my mom I wanted to go live with my dad because he had a my stepsister was there and she's 3 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So I had another female. That was my excuse to get out of my mother's house. And so I got over there and she had a boyfriend. So then I got a boyfriend and, you know, the girl thing. They were brothers. We were sisters. It was, you know, all that. And that's who I willingly gave my virginity to. Mm-hmm. And I was 13. He thought I was older than that, but I was 13. And, and it just went, it was a spiral from there. Mm-hmm. It was boyfriend, relationship. And that's what I felt I had to do to be loved.
Right.
My parents were so much, my stepmother saved me from my dad's wrath because he's he's an Irish Catholic. Mm. And he grew up in his mother made him go to church. I did not. He got out of it and no one in my family went.
Right.
I did go with my grandmother once to Catholic Mass and I think I fell asleep and she pinched me one too many times. And so I never went back.
It's not a good way to remember church.
Wait, I thought we were
pain.
Pinch me, I'm Irish. Is that the thing?
It might be.
It was about keeping people awake in church.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, we got okay, it. Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, that was how that kind of went. And so I never went back I didn't really miss it, you know, because I didn't know anything at that time. That was growing up. It was, and then at 17, I honestly remember, I'm not sure if I was living with my dad or my mom at the time, but I know I got shipped to New Mexico at 17, my senior year in high school, because they were worried about me. My mom was worried about me because I was having an affair with an older man. He was old enough to be my father.
Oh, jeez.
And, my dad was worried about me because I don't socialize well with people. Mm-hmm. I stay to myself. I would stay in my room. I would draw. I would read. That's mm-hmm. what I did. And so they talked and they figured, we'll send her to Becky. And I went to my sister's house in New Mexico. And she had 3 boys. And as long as I was there when she needed me to babysit and I went to school, I could pretty much do whatever I wanted to do.
Wow.
And I had my own room with the exit door. So I was never home.
Oh, wow.
So this is where the drinking started. I got an older boyfriend who was, I want to say he was, let's see, I was 17. I want to say he was 23 or 24. Mm-hmm. And he had a car. He could buy alcohol. It was all the things.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And then so that, you know.
So it was basically out of the pot and into the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And I started drinking heavily and I've always been a blackout drinker. It was the minute I ingested alcohol, I was going till it was either gone or I passed out one or two.
Right.
And I put myself in so many circumstances and looking back at it now. Mm-hmm. Had God not been with me through all of it, I should already either be dead or something very bad should have happened to me.
Right.
Worse than I can remember. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things, thankfully, I don't remember.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When you're a blackout drinker, you don't remember a lot the next day. You get told what you did. And that's not always always the best way to find out what you did the night before. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it had to do with, you know, men and sex and all those things that, again, just searching for the big hole that was there.
Yeah. Yeah. To fill it.
To fill it. And
yeah.
So that didn't work. I joined the military. Thinking, okay, well, if nobody else wants me, Uncle Sam does. Not really.
Because of the posters. It was the posters, wasn't it?
You saw the posters. But I had to get my parents' permission because I actually joined in the delayed entry program. Mm-hmm. So I was still technically 17. So they signed for me to go. Both of them said I would never make it through basic because I was an honorary redhead. You know, I'm looking at you. You know, John. You know.
I know.
And but they both told me I'd never make it through basic. Mm. So that's the one thing about me. Tell me I'm not going to do something, and that's going to be the, and watch me do it. And so I completed basic training really well, actually. I lost a lot of weight. I got into shape. I was feeling okay with myself at that moment. I was the last class to go through Fort Jackson, South Carolina, segregated. After my class, they started putting basic training together, which I think was the worst thing they ever did. The Army got soft, but that's just my opinion. Yeah. You guys both looked at each other. Is there something I should know about?
Mean like, you're talking about like women and men? Is that what you mean?
No, the Army is not what it used to be.
Oh.
You know, it's really not. The soldiers, they're, you know, they get these little cards that say, oh, I'm stressed out, I can't do basic. No, that's not how being a soldier works.
Mm. I wasn't sure what the segregated was.
Yeah. No, in the beginning, yes. When I went through, we were all women together in the dorm. And then when I went, my class graduated, they went to where half of the class was men and half the class was women.
Okay.
And they put them all together. And then
like they make them live together and train together and
They train together, but they don't live. They live in the same building. Just there's barriers between half the building and the other half. They found ways to get around that. And especially younger people away from home for the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they trained together. They did all that stuff together. And then that's when the stress cards got introduced. And
they just should have kept. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
They should have kept it the way it was. Because,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a rabbit hole. Rabbit hole. Squirrel. I say that a lot, so you'll probably hear it a lot. So after basic, I went to AIT, which was in Fort Gordon, Georgia, and met a boy, of course, because that's what I do. I met a boy, fell in love, wasn't anything. Come to find out, the guy that I was dating was actually being held back in AIT because he was being charged with assaulting a girl.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't know any of that at the time, but so we go through basic. I complete basic. The first weekend I'm at AIT, I sneak out and go to a party with like three of my girlfriends.
And what is AIT?
Advanced Individual Training.
Okay,
it's where you learn your actual job for the military.
Okay, gotcha.
I was a radio operator at 31 Charlie. The information that they trained me on was obsolete when I went through training.
Hmm.
Here's some great stuff you'll never need.
Yeah, basically that's what it was. Yeah. It turned into you've seen the military movies where the guy running around with the backpack and the radio.
Yeah.
That's what my job was.
Okay.
I was the guy with the radio.
Okay.
That's what I was trained to do. I never did it, and in both duty stations I didn't do it. But we'll get there. So AIT, we snuck out. I got in trouble the first weekend I was there. Went to a party, got blackout drunk, and apparently got assaulted by a few people. I don't remember any of it. We snuck back into the barracks, and me and my girlfriend, and she stayed with me. Mm-hmm. The rest of the girls actually came back on time, but she stayed with me.
Well, and that was nice of her.
Yeah. So when we had to do extra duty together, I did a majority of it because, you know, I felt bad because she stayed because I was drunk. So then completed AIT, had a few boyfriends through that time frame. My apologies. Had a few boyfriends through that time frame. And then, of course, Damon, he was the guy that was... he told me he loved me and he was going to follow me. And as soon as, you know, yeah.
You're like, yeah.
But in all actuality, he did though. Mm-hmm. My first duty station was Fort Clayton, Panama. And I was there a month and he showed up in Panama.
Hmm.
He got cleared of his charges because he didn't actually do what he was being accused of. And he showed up in my dorm and I'm like, well, what the hell are you doing here? You were supposed to go airborne.
Right.
You know, why would you give up airborne? And he's like, oh, because I love you. And I'm like, you're stupid. You're stupid.
You should have stuck with that.
You should have went with airborne, you know, but he got sent to another unit because he was infantry. And no, he wasn't infantry. He was an engineer. So he went to a different unit. We never really seen each other. Mm-hmm. By this time, I had met my first husband. Mm-hmm. And Panama was a party. That was it. You were legal to drink at 18. So all of us were legal to drink. So from Tuesday to Sunday, that's what we did.
Wow.
We would get up, go to training in the morning. We would do our job during the day. And I was the battalion commander's driver at that point. So I was basically his secretary. And whenever he had to go somewhere, I drove him in his Humvee. That's pretty much what I did. I learned paperwork really easily, really quickly, mm-hmm. and doing all the memos and all the things that he needed done. And that's when I met my first husband, who worked across the hall. And he was the one person my drill sergeant, or not drill sergeant, but my platoon sergeant told me to stay away from. She said to me, she said, do not mess with him. He is no good. So what did I do?
She's like, first husband.
But it wasn't actually supposed to be that either. It was, we went out one the weekend, because that's mm-hmm. what we did. And we ended up back at the barracks together. We stayed in the same barracks, and I went to his room instead of my own room. And the next morning when I woke up and I got ready to go back to my room, it was, where are you going? What are you doing? When are you coming back? And I mistook that for love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was control right from day one. And so I also, at this point in my life, I should have had been pregnant and had several kids at some point. But none of that had ever happened. So I just assumed that I couldn't have kids.
Right.
Because my period was really weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it till later. And apparently I had cysts.
Right, right.
But they apparently ruptured when I was in basic training.
Hmm.
And so here we go. Fertile mortal now. It was like, it was literally one time I didn't use a condom and there was my son.
Oh.
And I got pregnant with Corey. He's my oldest. And we got married. Now, my first husband and my husband now, they're both black. And my father is very much a racist.
Mm.
And when I called him to tell him I was getting married and I told him that he was black, my father's like, well, it's fine as long as you don't have his kids. You can't pollute the O'Donnell bloodline.
Wow. Oh,
and I said, well, too bad. Already pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm going to have the baby.
Yep.
And so my father disowned me. I went to New York. We went to New York. We got married. We went back to Panama. My son was born in Panama. So he's actually a dual citizen.
Oh.
Because the hospital that we had to have him on was actually on Panamanian soil.
Hmm.
So it was a... But yeah, the abuse in that relationship started. We didn't like each other. We didn't know each other. We didn't. Hmm. And we didn't like each other at all. I didn't like who he was. And the only thing that we had in common was that we got really, really drunk every chance that we could.
Hmm.
Both times I was pregnant, I didn't drink throughout that time frame. But throughout this 8 years of my life, I lived in a bottle. If I wasn't working, I was drunk.
Hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, if I was the first thing through training, mm-hmm. PT in the morning, I was running out the alcohol from the night before.
Wow.
And you could smell. I mean, the whole company was like that. It wasn't just me. You know what I mean? That's what we did. So, you know, and so we had Corey. We got into off post housing, had to get a nanny because we both went back to work after I had him. And, so she basically raised my son because we would leave because we were off post. we would leave at like 6 in the morning to get in for PT, and we weren't getting home till 6 or 7 o'clock that night. Mm-hmm. And so she basically raised him for the first, I think he was 6 months old when we got into on-post housing. Mm-hmm. And then it came, then it was easier. You know, I could go home on lunch. And well, during that time frame, I realized that, you know, she started stealing from us.
Oh.
And we paid her really well. I mean, considering we paid her well, she lived at our house. When we went grocery shopping, she basically bought the groceries because, you know, she was the one cooking and cleaning and doing all that. And, so some jewelry came up missing. And my husband at the time blamed it on her. Well, it wasn't.
Oh, boy.
He was giving it to his girlfriend.
Oh, my goodness.
The first marriage was horrible. He gets out of the military after we leave Panama. And we go to Fort Drum, New York, which is where I'm from. And we went there because I was originally supposed to go to Fort Hood, Texas. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, her name was Coco. We went through basic AIT and our first duty station together. We were both same MOS, same rank, everything. Mm. We swapped assignments because she's actually from Fort Hood.
Okay.
And she was a single mom. Mm-hmm. And so she went home to be with her mom and have help with the baby. Mm-hmm. Where I went home, I just went up there because it was helping her out. Mm-hmm. It was 6 to 1, half a dozen to me. Cause he got out, he was supposed to take care of the kids. I was going to be the soldier and, you know, take care of everything else.
Right.
Well, when he got out, he got very depressed and our relationship went even further south. Mm-hmm. He started staying up all night, getting drunk, watching porn on our laptop. And he would be up in the morning when I'm getting up to go to work, he hadn't been to sleep. So now you're supposed to take care of my kids all day.
Yeah.
So he's going to bed when I'm going to work. And then, so then at lunchtime, I'm coming home. So my kids are pretty much raising themselves.
Yeah.
I find out he was having an affair. And finally, I had said enough was enough because I was at home and I had support. I took the kids and I left and I went to my sister's house. He started blowing up the phone. 2, 3 in the morning. Now, my
because he's still that controlling person that he was in the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wanted to know, wanted me to come home with the kids and yada, yada, yada. It was just, he wanted to know, mm-hmm. he wanted to control that situation. And so I ended up giving in and going back to him. And we opened our marriage at that point. And so this was even worse because I hated myself even more. So the alcohol increased. My kids were with my mom pretty much every weekend. And I was out partying and at the bars and doing all the things that.
That's really hard because, I mean, you probably didn't have much of a self-esteem at that point anyways, mm-hmm. considering how you've grown up and looking for love. But now having the open marriage and it's just all in your face about, you know, he was already having an affair, but now it's all known that, you know, he's knowingly and you know that he is. And I mean, this is like bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Low self-esteem.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, no wonder. I mean, if it could increase with the drinking, it is, you know.
Yeah. I stayed intoxicated and, but you're right. I was at one of my lowest points. Mm-hmm. That wasn't all the way. It was right after I had my daughter that I was at one of my lowest, where that was the first time that I tried to kill myself. Mm. I figured they would be better off without me. They were with my mom 90% of the time. The depression was horrible. Mm. And he was not supposed to see the girl that he was in a relationship with. It wasn't supposed to be relationships. It was supposed to be, you know, and he started another relationship and he told me he loved her. Mm. And I thought there was no, so I did. I tried to slip my wrists and he broke down the bathroom door and came in and called my mother. my mom's on the phone. What do you need from me? What do you need me to do? I just need you to take care of my kids. I don't want to be here anymore. Mm. And so the paramedics came. That was the first time I had to go to the hospital overnight and be watched. And they started me going to therapy. And the alcohol just got worse. I didn't do what they wanted me to do. I wasn't ready to. I wasn't ready to accept the fact that my husband was a jerk. Yeah. And I chose wrong. And I followed right in my mother's footsteps.
Yeah.
That was my biggest thing, was I didn't want to get divorced because I didn't want to be like my mom. My mom had three husbands, and the one that was around the longest, they never got married. And
And you probably didn't think enough of yourself.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
You didn't want to be like her and repeat that, but you were already in a situation where you already picked bad.
Oh yeah.
And so you needed to. So you didn't want to repeat her habits, but you probably didn't think enough of yourself to do it either.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't think. Yeah, you're exactly correct. I didn't think enough of myself to get out of that relationship ever. And had it not been what happened, I probably wouldn't have. Yeah. So we try to get it back together. I get out of the military because I came up on reenlistment and my daughter was she was probably 8 months old, and they wanted to send me to Korea, which is a hardship tour, which means I couldn't take them with me. Wow. So I made the decision to get out because I wasn't leaving them with my husband, because through all of this, even though we were oil and water, and the abuse was, I mean, literally, there was physical altercations, there was verbal altercations, and, you know, I think there was at least 8 times where I went to jail because I was the soldier, you know?
Yeah.
When the MPs get called to the housing, it's the soldier that always goes to jail.
Yeah.
You know? My company commander, it was like speed dial coming to get me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was just totally toxic. And so when I get out, so I didn't want to leave my kids in that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I could only imagine. He brought her to my house once for a party, and I didn't know she was there.
Oh.
So I could only imagine what he would do if I was in Korea.
Wow.
So, anyway, yeah.
You're like, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah, that's not happening. Forget it.
Yeah. It was horrible. It was it was a very, very low point in my life. And I get out of the military, and we decide to move to DC because I got offered a position at the Department of Energy. And he's from Chesapeake, Virginia. So he was down in Chesapeake with the kids, and I was staying at DC trying to find us a place to live. It was probably 5 or 6 months of that, of me going down to Chesapeake every weekend. And so I finally get us a place, and we move all in. And at this time, we're talking to his first wife about being able to see his son from his first marriage. And she finally agrees for Christmas that year, and he comes up during Christmas, and things are good. Well, they weren't really good. I mean, my husband, his attitude and his behaviors didn't change at all.
Right.
And he was still up all night drinking and watching
junk.
Yeah. And the kids were, you know, I would get them up in the morning. I would get them their breakfast. And I don't think either one of my kids eat Pop-Tarts to this day, because that's pretty much what they ate for breakfast their whole childhood. And so he comes up for Christmas. And now, mind you, he had mental health problems. He was, he had motor skill problems. And, but it was more so that his mother didn't, he could learn. You just had to be patient and teach him. And so when he was with us at Christmas, we helped him learn how to tie his shoes, zip his coat, put his coat on himself.
Right.
And how to talk to you rather than, he would get so excited that he couldn't get the words out.
Right.
And so we were working with him through that. And so I talked to his mother. I talked to Angela, and I was like, look, I really, you know, I have really good health care. Can, you know, and I convinced her to let him come live with us.
Okay.
So when he finished school that June, she sent him up with all his stuff. and he was coming to live with us.
Oh.
Which I thought was a great thing.
Yeah.
I really thought it was going to be great that, you know, he was going to be able to get the help that he needed, and it didn't happen. Hmm. He was with us for 3 weeks, and then my husband killed him.
Wow.
And talk about lowest point of your life.
Wow.
I get a call from, I'm at work, and I get a call from my husband that I have to come home. And, that Dale wasn't breathing and I needed to come home. So my whole life shattered at that moment. This was my lowest of, I wanted to die.
Yeah.
And so I get home and the police, of course, are all in my apartment, and we go through, I go in and the first thing I want to know is where my kids are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go in and I check on them and I get them all situated. And then I come out and I said, okay, somebody please tell me what's going on, 'cause I've been at work. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the detective told us that Dale died. Wow. He was dead on arrival at the hospital. And, so of course.
Right. Like what happened, right?
And, so they did an autopsy. They did, you know, DCS came and took my two children out of our home. We went to the police, the station, and we did the questions and all that. And so the next morning, they got the indictment. They arrested him. They had no intention of arresting me, or because he went in and he told them everything that happened. Mm-hmm. He had kept him up all night, disciplining him because he was he lied to me. And that's where the guilt comes from me for so many years, was because it was because Dale lied to me that the whole
and thing, your husband knew it.
And the whole thing started.
Okay.
And, but he kept him up all night and he hit him and extension cords and was just, it was horrible. It was torture that the child went through.
And how old was he?
He was 9.
Oh my goodness.
And it was it was a very much a wake-up call.
Yeah.
That he had been disciplining my children excessively, but he always did it when I wasn't home.
Mm.
And when I would get home, then him and I would go at it. And it was a toxic environment.
Yeah.
And no way, shape, or form should I have brought the child into it.
Yeah.
And that's the guilt that I walked with for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up in prison because the grand jury indicted me. I think it was 5 months after the fact.
Hmm.
They indicted me for basically child neglect. But by the statute of the law, I wasn't, because the blow that actually killed him, that caused the internal bleeding that killed him, occurred at like 2 a.m. when I was passed out drunk, because I was still living in the bottle at the time.
Wow.
And I don't know. It's what saved me, because at this point in my life, my kids weren't with me. My husband was in prison. All I did was drink. I didn't eat. I didn't nothing. The minute I got home from work, I was in the bottle until the next day when I went to work. And the first 6 weeks, it was straight. I was just drunk.
Mm-hmm.
There was no. And I don't think I called my mother until probably a month later, when I finally, you know, sobered up enough to say, oh, I probably should get some support up here.
Right,
you
right, know? Yeah.
It was the most difficult thing that I have ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got indicted, and I found out I got indicted because it got faxed to me at work. I was on the front page of the newspaper in Virginia, and, that's how I found out. So I called the detectives and I'm like, okay, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
At this point, I have, you know, what do I need to do? Do I need to come in now? And he's like, no, he says, your bond's going to be, they already knew what my bond was going to be and everything. And he said, your bond's going to be $500,000. So you either need to pay a bondsman or have someone sign, you know.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine at work, God was with me through all of this.
Yeah.
Because he opened doors that never should have been opened.
Right.
And looking back at it now.
Right. I for sure. Yeah.
Because he did, you know, he put me in the position where I was and with the people that I knew. And I was, you know, and Linda's like, well, I know you're going to go to court. I'll sign my house. She signed the title of her house for my bond.
Wow.
Or the deed for her house, whatever that is for. And so I go to court. I do what I'm supposed to do. And my lawyer, again, God opened it up. The lawyer that I had wrote the child laws in Virginia.
What?
He was on the committee that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So he knew exactly what was in it, what wasn't in it, and what they were charging me with, I wasn't guilty of.
Right.
And so they, so he talked to the DA, and I was convicted of a class 6 felony, which is you basically scream at your kid, you're guilty of what I went to prison for. And so they came to an agreement. I was supposed to get probation. Because I had a letter from my boss at the Department of Energy, and I wasn't supposed to go to prison. Well, God saw better. I went to jail, or I went to court that morning, and I was still so drunk from the night before that I couldn't tell you what the judge said. I had to look at my lawyer and say, what did he just say?
Yeah.
And he sentenced me to 3 years. Well, he sentenced me to 5, and I had to serve 3. And it's what saved my life. Because I would have been dead.
Yeah.
The path I was going, I would have killed myself and probably other people with me because I was drinking and driving. I was doing all kinds of reckless behavior.
Yeah.
And so I went to prison for 3 years.
So you obviously probably sobered up, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you don't have to. You really don't have to in
you
prison.
You can find stuff.
You can find alcohol. You can find drugs. You can find whatever you're looking for in there. If you want to.
Right.
I was like, I'm not doing that.
Good.
And so I got into a therapeutic community and I started going to church.
Good.
That's where I was first introduced to Jesus.
Nice.
And where I got saved.
That's awesome.
And
now, was it people who came into the prison who like did church?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They brought it in. They would bring it into the church, or they would bring the church in and we would get together. We would sing. We would, you know.
Oh, very cool.
There would be a pastor and he would, you know, preach a message.
It was like once a week?
Yeah. And then we also had Bible study.
Oh, very cool.
To where we would go and there was this little old lady. There's always a little old lady, right? And she's the one.
Brave enough.
Yeah. And she was the one that would sit with me.
Yeah.
And she told me the stories. I didn't, because I knew nothing.
Like the biblical stories?
Yeah, she would tell me the biblical stories, like Jonah and
David and Goliath. Daniel and the lion's
Noah,
den.
Yeah. And the lion's den. You know, she's the one that told me the stories. To this day, I can't remember her name, but I can picture her like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm very much a face person. I don't remember names.
She probably prefers that you remember the stories anyways. Yeah,
probably. And she was a saint. And she would spend so much time with me because I told him, I was like, I didn't grow up in church. I don't know any of this. And she told me who Jesus was.
That's awesome.
And she told me how much he loves me no matter what happened.
Wow. And you were like, wait, what?
Yeah. I was like, what?
You don't know what I've done.
Yeah. And I still didn't believe her.
Yeah.
I still wasn't willing to fully. It took another 20 years before that happened.
But she was planting the seed.
Yes, she did. Yeah. And through the next, when I finally got out, and of course, at this point, me and my first husband are no longer in communication with each other. Because even when I was like, you know, when I learned, you know, the Bible tells you if you're married, you're married. Yeah. You know what I mean? Even with the infidelity and everything in it, I was like, I still want to try to make this work.
Yeah.
You know, because he said he was going to church and he was, you know, he was getting back because he grew up in church.
Okay.
And so I started to try and communicate with him. And all it was, you're my wife. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And that's what the letters were. It was still that control.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I no. Yeah. God does not want this for me. Right. I know he doesn't. Right. I know he doesn't want me to stay in this to where I'm completely miserable. Mm-hmm. And I would have been. Yeah. And so we didn't get divorced until, I think, 4 years ago. Yeah, because mm-hmm. my current husband and I would be married 3 years this year. Yeah. And but he didn't divorce me till then.
Yeah.
But I stopped communicating with him. Mm-hmm. I sent him divorce papers twice and nothing ever came of it. Mm-hmm. And but he got sentenced to 35 years and 25 for the murder charge and 10 for the child abuse charges. But they sentenced him concurrent. So he ended up having to serve 25 years.
Wow.
He did 23 with good time. He got out. He got out in 2023. Mm-hmm. And the whole time he was in there. Now they stripped my husband's rights to the kids. Mm-hmm. But the whole time he was in prison, my mother had our kids. And my mother never told him that he couldn't write to them. He couldn't nothing. So. But he never did.
Mm.
And that's something that my kids struggle with now.
Yeah.
You know, that because even though I was in there, I would call every Sunday. Mm-hmm. She allowed me to call every Sunday and I could write letters and whatever mm-hmm. as much as I wanted to. And they would send me pictures and, you know. But so I get out. Where am I at? I get out. Go through probation because I have to do that. Mm-hmm. And of course I meet a boy. There's always a boy. I was never alone very long.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of what my problem, well, not really what my problem was.
Well, starting at 13 is understandable because that's that formative years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was never alone for very long. I always had to have somebody there mm-hmm. to tell me I love you and you're worthy.
Yeah.
I don't have to have that today, but we'll get to that.
Not by people.
Not by people. Yeah, not by people. I don't have to have somebody tell me that today. But fast forward about 20 years of mm-hmm. Different relationships, drinking, not drinking. But there was no help in there. Mm-hmm. There was no, it was all still the same drama mm-hmm. and the hole was there. Mm-hmm. The hole in my heart was there because my family didn't go to church. So even though when I got down here and I was with the kids, there was still that hole because I had started to fill it. I had started to get to know him. And then it was like, I went back to life. Mm-hmm. And, it was just, that was it. It was just life. And I didn't pursue anything more with it.
This is what happens when there is a convert that's not then discipled. Because Jesus said, go make disciples. He didn't say, go make converts. And so when people pray the salvation prayer and then are just left to fend for themselves, the majority of the time they just go back to regular life and they think, oh, great. I get to spend eternity with Jesus. That's great. I don't have to go to hell. And they go back to their regular life and it doesn't stick because they think they're good and they mm-hmm. could just go back to regular life. And when you have that kind of life, it just starts to spiral out of control again. Yeah. And so that's why discipleship and helping people along, regardless of what kind of life you have, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's just, you know, regular life or if it's putting yourself in a whole lot of danger, making all of those kind of choices, neither one of them are following after God.
Right.
So go ahead.
Yeah, definitely wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
So all of that time and I met my current husband 13 years ago. I was working at a hotel and I was here in mm-hmm. Plant City. I was living with my sister. We lived in a trailer and with her youngest son, and I got to see my kids, you know, whenever I wanted to go see them, but I was never able to actually have my kids in my home again mm-hmm. after that. And it was because I didn't feel worthy. I didn't feel worthy to be their mom. So I would do just enough to show that I was doing something.
Yeah.
But it was my mom knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she still kept me at arm's length mm-hmm. because she didn't want to hurt the kids anymore. And so we went to, I lived next door to them, you know, all different things throughout their life to where I would, but the problem was, is I would show up for a period of time, but then that unworthy and that guilt would come back and I would slowly exit back out again.
It's like shame and guilt.
And because of that, my relationship with my kids suffered, especially my daughter.
Yeah.
My daughter didn't remember ever living with me.
Mm.
And the only thing she remembered of me was me coming in, me going out, me going out. And so.
And they probably viewed it like she doesn't love us enough to stick around.
Right.
Because that's how mm-hmm. it works.
Yeah. And that is exactly how they felt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got. My husband and I went to Kentucky. It would have been 6 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I was tired of the hot. I hate being hot.
I'm right there with you, sister.
I hate it with a passion, especially us big girls, because it's like, you know, we get, no, we don't want to do that. So
thank God for air conditioning. Exactly. That's all I have to say.
That's all I have to say. Thank God for air conditioning. But yeah, so when Anissa graduated from high school,
mm-hmm.
She started going to college. That's my daughter. Mm-hmm. She's she started going to St. Leo, to where she lived in the dorms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work for her. So she ended up coming back home and she got a job. And mm-hmm. then she's doing her degree online.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll graduate in December. I'm so proud of her. Yes, so proud of her. And so at that point, I was like, OK, you're being a grown up now. Mom's out. Mom's going to Kentucky. She's going to where I get four seasons again. And so we move up there. And 2-3 years into it. No, because I'm coming up on 3 years. So it would have been 2 years. I'm standing in the backyard of my house. I'm in my big old jammy nightgown and I'm mm-hmm. just screaming at my husband who's sitting out by the fire in our fire pit.
And you had been indulging.
Oh God, yes. I was drunker than a skunk.
Yes. Yeah.
I was drunker than a skunk. I stayed that way. Even then, when we went up there, even though I said I was happy, I wasn't.
Yeah.
I stayed drunk because mm-hmm. I still didn't like who I was.
Yeah.
I didn't like.
Even though you kept changing your environment,
yeah.
you still had that big old hole.
It was still
yeah.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that they tell us in AA is it doesn't matter where you go, you're still there.
Yep.
And that was the biggest thing was I was still there wherever I went.
You can't get away from yourself. No, you just can't.
And I
no matter how much you run.
Yeah. And the guilt and the shame and the it was weighing me down so much that I didn't know anything else to do but to drink. I tried therapy, and every time it was during COVID and all that, to where everything was virtual and I can lie to you through a phone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And being an alcoholic, I am good at lying.
Yeah.
I'm good at telling stories. I'm good at being who you need me to be.
Right. Right.
And, so it didn't help me any because I'm sitting there telling you, oh yeah, everything's great. Everything's hunky dory. And no, it's not. Mm. It's really not.
Right,
I'm drowning.
Yeah.
And I couldn't admit that because my pride got in the way.
Yeah.
I can't tell someone that I'm drowning. But if you do that, you suck and you already suck anyway. So then you're just admitting it again that you suck.
Then you're just telling everybody else that you do instead of just knowing.
And so let's see.
So you're out in the backyard.
So yeah. So I'm out in the backyard. I'm just screaming. I'm literally screaming
happy,
at him.
Happy, mad.
Oh, I'm mad. Okay. And I couldn't even tell you what I'm mad about.
Right.
But it was just, I was screaming at him like a raging lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch my, and I'm watching myself.
Like an out of body experience thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching myself scream at him over whatever the hell he's done at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, And I And the realization hits me that I'm still the same angry 13-year-old.
Mm.
The 20-year-old that I was in my first marriage. Nothing has changed. Mm. Even though I said that I've changed because, you know, I have a good job and I pay all of our bills, I'm still a raging lunatic.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed. Mm. Nothing is different. So I go into the house and apparently I text him that I'm going to take a bunch of pills and go to sleep and hope I don't wake up.
Mm.
Did I do that? I am not sure. The text message went through and there was an empty pill bottle on the nightstand. How many was in it? What I took? I don't know.
Yeah.
Was
God there?
Oh, yes. Oh yeah. God was all in there.
Right.
Cause he's the one that's showing me just how, how unrealistic I was that I thought I was so much different of a person. And I thought I had come to terms with Dale and losing him and all that. But no, I was still not. I was still crazy. I was still full of guilt and shame and anger. Mm-hmm. I was so mad that he
so full, but yet so empty.
Yeah. Mm. And so I get up the next morning and I come out to my husband and I said, "So did my crazy finally push you away? Did I do enough damage yet?" Because that's what I did. Mm. Anything that was good in my life, I pushed it away. I created havoc. I would get crazy and make sure that it destroyed.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What are you talking about? That's a normal Saturday night." And I haven't had a drink since.
Wow.
That was June 22nd, 2021. Remember correctly.
Well, congratulations.
That's no, it's awesome. Actually 2022 because it'll be 3 years this year in June. And
congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I went to and I did the work.
Yeah.
You know, I started going to AA that following Tuesday because that was a Sunday. It was Father's Day. I went to AA the next Tuesday. And funny story with that is the first meeting I went to, I went onto the app and I'm looking and it's supposed to start at 8 according to the app. So I'm walking at 7:45. Now I'm FaceTiming one of my friends because I've come clean. I told her that, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I need to go to meetings and I need to get back to what I know to make me better.
Yeah.
And I walk in and I'm FaceTiming with her and the meeting's going on.
Oh.
The meeting's already going on. So I slowly back out the door and I'm like, "Oh God." That's exactly what I said. I was like, "Oh God, the meeting's already going on." And she's like, "You're going to hang up the phone and you're going to go back in there."
Yeah.
"You're going to go back in."
Yeah.
And I said, "But I don't want to. I already made a fool of my." "You're going to hang up the phone and you're going to go back in."
Yeah.
"All right, fine." So I hung up the phone and I went back in and I sat on the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I met one of the women that was truly impactful of me staying sober.
Mm.
She came up to me after the meeting and she's like, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you came back in. I wasn't sure." And we became fast friends.
Awesome.
She helped me go to meetings, find meetings, and create the network that you need in order to stay sober.
That's awesome.
And so I have to talk about Ed. Ed was very impactful for me to stay sober.
Mm-hmm.
He had this peace, this calm that whenever you came close to him, you wanted to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted that. You wanted that peace.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been sober for 35 years, I think, at the time. Wow. And he worked and he worshiped and he knew Jesus. And that was just amazing. And then I met his wife and she became my sponsor.
Mm.
And
that was peace that you never knew.
And, no,
right.
Never, never in all my years had I even remotely come close to that sense of just.
Yeah.
And they had it. And every time you got with them, it's like, "Oh my God, I want what you have."
Yeah.
And she told me, "Well, you got to do the work to get what I have."
Mm-hmm.
And so she walked me through the steps. And and I fought her on step two because I was like, "No, I'm not believing in Jesus because I'm just not doing it. I'm not going back to Jesus. I'm not going back to church. I'm not doing that." I fought her so hard on step two. Step two is where you came to believe in a power greater than yourselves could restore us to sanity. And I was like, "No, I'm not doing it. Jesus left me. He left me again because I was angry again.
Yeah.
I was angry again. I was still angry. Let me rephrase. And I think I went, she said, well, just come to my church where we are having baptism Sunday or something. It was something special going on. Yeah. I want to say it was baptisms. And so sure enough, I walked in the door to her church.
Mm-hmm.
And I could breathe.
Yeah.
I didn't pick her church to go to.
Yeah.
I found my own. And I found where I felt that feeling when I walked in.
Mm-hmm.
And I got baptized there.
Awesome.
After my husband and I officially got married.
Mm-hmm.
Because I talked to the pastor and I told him. And he's like, well, you know, you guys are technically really kind of living in sin still. Because we were. Because
yeah.
my first husband wouldn't divorce me. And so when he finally did, we got married on the 11th of November.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got baptized on the 24th of November.
Nice.
And it was, and ever since then, the peace has been there.
Yeah.
I mean, I still carried a lot of the guilt and everything, but I did step four.
Mm-hmm.
And I really got real with step four. And I really wrote down everything.
What's step four?
Okay. Step four is you take a fearless and moral inventory of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you sit down and you write down everything that you think someone has done to you. Mm. Like I put on, for instance, I put on there my first husband, all that mm-hmm. stuff. I put on, you know, the molestation as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I put, you know, the unloved as a kid mm-hmm. and all the things that I thought people did to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you get over to step column four.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take what your part of that was.
Mm.
And you actually have to look at yourself and how you contributed to this.
Yeah.
And it's people, places, things. It's every institutions. Mm-hmm. It's every resentment that you carry. And you're, you know, I was mad at the judge because
you're like, can I have more paper, please?
Yeah, exactly. It was like a notebook, right? It was like a whole notebook. And but then you had to take a look at yourself
mm-hmm.
and see what you actually did,
right.
You know, and no, I didn't have any part of the molestation as a kid,
right.
But I carried it and I used it as yeah. a victim yeah. mode my right. whole life. It was,
right.
oh, see, mm-hmm. this happened to me. Oh, God, feel sorry for me.
Right. It was a reason to drink.
Exactly. All it was yeah. a reason. It mm-hmm. was a reason to drink. And so I did that and I did step five with God and another person, we explain the exact nature of our wrongs.
Mm.
And so that's when I sit down with her and God and I told her everything that I had just written down. And then it was, I'm iffy which happened first, whether it was I did my step five with her or I went to the Christian retreat. It was mm-hmm. a 3-day retreat. Called the Great Banquet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally, I went in to the church on Friday and it's people talking to us all day. They feed us, we sing, they show us Jesus's mm. love. And there's different places, points in that where we sit down with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to lay Dale at his feet.
Hmm.
At the foot of the cross through
that. Oh, that's
and
beautiful.
That was the time that I truly mm-hmm. left the guilt and the shame
yeah.
and everything from this poor little boy that
yeah.
I didn't have to carry it anymore. He took yeah. it from me.
Wow.
And I've been free ever since.
Praise God.
And it was all because I finally accepted it.
Yeah.
I finally accepted him. For who he was and what he wanted to do for me.
Yeah.
Provided I let him.
Yeah.
And I still struggle today, not so much with the guilt for him, but
yeah.
but him wanting to do that for me. The unworthiness
mm.
is still a struggle for me. I don't feel like I should have people care about me. Only because not because of what I've done or who I was, but it was just, that's how my life has always been.
Can I say something to you?
Yeah.
If I put it this way, this might help. It's a little bit different view. If I tell you that when you think that, you possibly are saying that his blood wasn't enough.
See, why do you tell me things like that?
Because now you can't say that.
Now I can't say that.
Because his blood was enough.
Oh, it was enough and then some.
Yeah.
But yeah.
His blood was enough.
More than enough.
Yeah. So you can't carry anymore.
I can't. You're right. I didn't. I've never looked at it like that.
Yeah.
See, that's why I love you.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
We're done.
I think I hit all the high points and the low points and the points in between.
Yeah.
But my life today is so much better.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
When we came back down here a year ago, I struggled with finding a church. I went to several.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept coming back to FLC.
Mm-hmm.
It was God was all in that too, because it literally is around the corner from where I stay with my stepdad. And I would go to like other places to go to Bible study or whatnot. They'd be canceled, but FLC was going on. So I would detour and I would go, let's go see what's going on. And I've been in.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's home. I walk in and the peace comes over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, we love having you there.
Well, thanks.
And you've been going to a couple different Bible studies from there.
Yeah.
A couple different life groups.
Yep. I go to doing the women's life group.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing Known. That's a lot of reading, which I like to read.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, sometimes it's like, wow.
It's a lot.
The things that we're reading, things that we're reading, like we're doing a praying life right now.
Mm-hmm.
And because my prayer life is not so hot. But it's teaching me how to pray,
mm-hmm.
in essence. You know, it's like God wants you in every little weird facet that you have.
Yeah.
That's what he wants.
Yeah.
He doesn't want you to placate him and say, mm-hmm. oh, everything's good. Thank you. You know, no, he knows.
Yeah.
Just talk to him.
Yep. That's exactly
And that's basically what the book's showing us. And
yeah.
Let's see. Oh, what other one am I doing? A beautiful life. Something. No, that's not the name of it. It's the one on Tuesdays.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's another book that we're doing. It's teaching me how to be a Christian, you know, because I didn't even when I got sober and I got and I walked through up there, the church didn't have, there wasn't any discipling going on. It was, you go to church, there was no Bible studies, there was no. And so I've been floundering along on my own.
Right.
I've been floundering
along. That's the no discipleship part. Like, it's good that you go to church, but you need that deeper, that teaching that this is what to do, you know.
And and since I've been here and I go to our group on Saturday, and that's amazing. I love that one because there's so many different aspects of where people are in their walk. So I don't feel so alone. You know what I mean? When I go to some groups, it's like they're so much further in where they are in their spiritual walk that I feel like, and this is all just me in my own head. And I know that too, because I know that because I've lived with myself for 49 years now. So I know, you know, and, I don't feel comfortable enough to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I like the smaller portions where, you know, we can truly have a conversation. And when the light bulbs go off, I can share that the light bulbs are going off.
Yeah.
And so I know that's where I'm at and what I need to wear.
And you do contribute a lot, too, just so you know.
Well, thank you.
Because of all the things you have done, you are definitely helping other people whenever you see that they're struggling. That's a huge part of what we do in our life group is, you know, even you weren't there, but this past one of them was having a problem with anger. And we even had one of the younger ones who's been working through that help her, which is what I love with the difference in age and the different cultures that we have. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love that because everybody's able to help each other.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you're older, younger, you know, how long you've been in church, how short you've been in church, everybody's able to help everybody. And it's good to have a safe space, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I love it. So, but yeah, so you definitely have contributed. You've brought some things in from AA and the different things that you've learned and, you know, it's super encouraging. So you know, you absolutely have things to contribute, regardless of how long or how short you've been on this journey. So you definitely have. So share with us some of the things with like your family and your children that, that have improved since you've been sober and walking with Christ.
Oh, my relationship with my kids is great. Mm-hmm. I was able to, part of AA also is step 8 and 9 is we make a list of who we hurt, mm-hmm. and then we make amends. And part of making amends is listening to them. And I've been able to sit down with my son, and he was able to explain to me all of his feelings. And I'm starting the process with my daughter. It's a little bit harder with her because mm-hmm. she's a lot more closed off to me. But we're getting better.
Yeah.
Like her, they were just having a major disagreement this last weekend, mm-hmm. but they both reached out to me.
Oh,
I'm so used to my son. Awesome. Yeah. I'm so used to my son. You know, he's immediate. He's picking mm-hmm. up the phone. He's calling me, Mom, this is going on. What do I do? But she called me too.
That's cool.
And so we're getting better. Yeah, and good. And that's only because I'm truly trying to listen.
Yeah.
Which is which I didn't learn that in AA. I learned that in being an active listener. I've learned that in our life groups.
Yeah.
Is I don't listen to respond. I listen to what's actually going on with the person. And so I was able to do that with the kids. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. It was an amazing feeling when she called me and she's like, Mom, I don't know what to do. He's yelling at me and I don't know. And so I was just able to listen to her and let her. And that's the thing with the two of them is they walk themselves right through the problem to where all I have to do is say, well, what do you think? Or yes.
You really. Just listen and go, okay.
Okay.
So then what?
Yeah. And then they walk themselves all the way
that's
through
amazing.
It, you know, because they're very mature.
Yeah.
They're very mature.
They just need a sounding board.
Yep. And that's what I am. But it made my whole day
when I was that's the one, amazing.
And when I was the one that she called.
Yeah.
So
very cool.
It was my husband's and I's relationship. We've always had a good relationship because mm-hmm. we didn't start off to be a relationship. Mm-hmm. We really didn't. We started.
He just stuck around long enough for you to come around.
What it was is he was a traveling construction worker.
Okay.
He was here for the time frame, and while he was here for the time frame, we were just going to be friends.
Oh, okay.
And here we are 13 years later, happily married, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
It's because we didn't start off with any prerequisites. We literally were who we were.
Mm-hmm.
When we went into it, he told me everything about himself. I told, there was no, we were just, there was
you were
no,
just best friends first. Yeah. Yeah.
And, with benefits. and then when he was getting ready to leave is when we both realized that.
Yeah.
No. And, he did, he left for a period
mm-hmm.
and then he was like, nah. And we tried to make it work distance wise and and here we are.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I've slowly rebuilt my relationship with my father in New York. We talk occasionally. We still aren't close.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that is, it's just because I don't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
He will talk my ear off, mm-hmm. but I just don't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And it's just because I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think I should be the only one doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part is for me to repair that relationship. It has to be me doing it.
Yeah.
And I have to come to terms with that. And I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
And that's okay too.
It'll come.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's okay to take some time for yourself and work on some at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't eat the whole pizza all at once.
Oh, but I try.
It's a bite at a time. You can try to eat the whole pizza, just at a bite at a time. Of course, you might feel very full before you get there.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. So there were a couple of verses that that you had mentioned to me earlier. One was Psalms 107:1. So I'm just going to go ahead and read it, and then you can tell me how that comes into play with your story. Psalms 107:1 says, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever."
I try to keep a heart of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that is where that comes into it. It's he's good. I need to, you know, I need to keep that in mind that no matter where, no matter what my brain's telling me, my heart is in the right place. It's with him where he's good and I can stand on that.
Yeah.
And I give him all the praise because that's where it goes. I'm a music person. I don't sing. I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I listen to praise music all day. That's where when I first started this journey, it was, I used to listen to country and R&B and all that. And now it's, I listen to praise, but it's in the different formats. It's, I have R&B and I have country and I have,
there's all different rock styles.
And I never knew that until now. And that's all that's on my Pandora anymore.
Yeah.
And that's all. So, and it's constantly going.
Yeah.
And because that's where I stay the most in the right headspace.
Yeah.
Is it if that I surround myself with that rather than.
Well, that's, it's great. It's feeding yourself all kinds of amazing things and keeping in that place of gratitude is an amazing place to be because it's really hard sometimes whenever you're facing some hard things to be grateful. And
when life happens.
Life.
That one's actually on a sticky note.
On
my computer monitor.
It's a great reminder. Yes. Yeah. Your computer monitor where you work and you've been working, what, 70, 80 hours recently?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good thing to remember that. One of the other ones is 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain.
It's just standing on the Lord and everything. That's the biggest one from that one. And it's no matter what I'm doing, even if like for the job that I do now, it has really nothing to do with anything. I process medical claims all day, but there's people that I interact with all day. So I try to show them the love that God showed me. And no matter what the case, you know, I have the attendance line, you know, so when they text me and they say, oh, they have a family emergency, well, I'm sending prayers to you. And I will, and I'll stop and I'll say that prayer. Because I know then I'm doing what God wants me to do. You know, when I went through the walk in Kentucky, the main thing that one of the pastors said to me when I was leaving was, get ready for interruptions because God will interrupt you when it's needed.
Wow. That's awesome. I love that.
And that's, so I look for those. If there's an interruption that happens, it's because God needs me to do something. And that's how I truly try to walk each day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that.
Thanks.
The great interruption.
Yep. And everyone that I've ever ignored will come back. It comes back twofold. And it really does. I've because there was, what was I doing one day? Something came across the phone and I was like, okay, attendance is updated, but I didn't do anything more than that, which is normally what I do, you know, and this girl, she was struggling with her, no, I'm sorry. It was a gentleman. He was struggling with his mental health. And so he texts me back again. He's like, I don't know what to do. It's like, well, what do you mean you don't know what to do? You told me you weren't coming. And then he called me. And that was an interruption that I needed to take because he was on the ledge. And he was struggling really hard with his mental health and his medication wasn't helping him. And because I had been there and I had walked through it, I was able to listen and give him, you know, and now he went to, and he got the help that he needed. But it was at that moment. That was what he needed, was just somebody to listen to him.
Wow.
And I was on the other end of the attendance line and I had walked through that. So I was able to listen and say, okay, just tell me what's going on.
That's amazing to be able to be in that. I mean, do you realize what an exceptional place that is for you to be, that you've been there and for you to be able to be there? I mean, that's such a critical place to be and to now be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, how God took what the enemy meant for bad and turned it for good.
Yeah.
And it could have very well and probably did save that man's life that day. I mean, because you just never know.
No, you don't.
Because, you know, you could be anybody could be one choice away.
Yep.
In that moment. Because you know, because you've been there.
I've been there.
Yeah. So, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. That was
praise God.
Yeah. And that was a whole God thing.
Yeah.
And it was God put it on his heart to do it again. Cause if he hadn't, cause I ignored it the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just did my normal, you know, the, mm-hmm. and I didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
Cause I was busy doing something else. What yeah. I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
God's like, Hey,
try again. I'm going to give you another opportunity for that. Cause he's good at that. God is good at that. He's like, okay, you didn't do it the first time. So I'm going to give you another opportunity. Here you go. Try again.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I
yeah.
got you now. Thanks. All right. Yep. Earbuds in. I'm listening.
He's the God of another chance. Yeah. Oh, thank you, God. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. It's a pretty crazy one, but man, God was with you in such a tremendous way, so many, so many times. And we are so grateful. And I know you are, but we are so grateful that he kept you along and have got you to this place because we love that you are a part of our family. And we are looking forward to all of the great things that he's doing through you and in you and the future of our church and all the amazing things that is going to happen and the people that are going to come and, you know, get to know God too and making the kingdom fuller.
Yes.
Woohoo. Woo-hoo. Yay, God. John is still here. Mm-hmm. He is.
I'm just listening. Lots of listening.
He's just soaking everything in. He is still here. I promise. So I hope that everybody out there is encouraged today and, don't ignore those great interruptions. You know, pay attention. Let God use you in all those different ways. And be encouraged that God has a purpose for you. And if you know anybody or if you're that person who has that great big void in your life, let Jesus fill it because he will fill it in every single way that you need it. And he is longing to do it. He is calling you home to him. So until next time, continue believing in the one and only true God, and we will see you then.